Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. He's in San Diego. I am in Arizona, Phoenix to be exact. That's where the Padres and Diamondbacks begin three-game series tonight. Ryan, where would you like to start?
I would like to start talking about a bad homestand that could have been a disastrous homestand, Kevin. Padres take 2 of 3 from the Reds after getting swept by the Phillies. Things could have gotten really ugly, but it looks as if the Padres got themselves back on track a little bit with the second and third games against the Reds.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point and an interesting way to look at it. I mean, it was a bad homestand. They lost the first 4 games, right, but they won the final 2. And that's the, you know, the thing about baseball and the ebbs and flows and living with it. Like if we'd done this podcast 3 days ago and they had lost 4 or 5 in a row at that point, because they also that disaster there at the end of the road trip, the one series road trip to Colorado. Yeah. Yeah, these last 2 games I thought went about as well as they could. Joe Musgrove goes 6 innings, gives up 2 runs. The night before that, Yu Darvish comes off the IL, 5 innings, shutout, no walks, was just attacking the strike zone. Everything pretty much working. That is what they needed, because if we're going to talk about this season as a whole, you've got to look at things inside of the results. And that means both good and bad. Mm-hmm. And what they needed was their starting pitching to get back on track.
They did, and they need Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish to be healthy and available and going deep into games. And, you know, five from Darvish, right?
On his first day back on a pitch count, you know, yep.
Right. I mean, that was okay. He exits after 5 because that was the plan. Musgrove, I thought, put together his most complete outing of the year, maybe silenced some of the people, maybe myself included, who wondered if this was a sign of something bigger. And if his struggles were the sign of something bigger, and he rallied.
I think that was fair. Well. There's times I'll push back on that. This was absolutely fair. Now, right. I mean, you could also during that say, well, this is Joe Musgrove and you know, he works through stuff and he'll find a way. And you say those things about Darvish too, and that's great. But those were absolutely valid concerns. They were some concerns from inside the organization. Heck, I even think I wrote it once, like Joe Musgrove would be concerned. If he weren't Joe Musgrove, and he has this ultimate belief in himself, but he's also a really honest guy. And, man, he worked his butt off, and he was a lot better.
Yeah, it was nice. I thought his velocity seemed up a little. Mm-hmm. The things that would cause some concern, you know, like a downtick in velocity, you know, that wasn't there. I thought that he was able to place the breaking stuff a little bit better. Not necessarily maybe a vintage Joe Musgrove outing, but certainly closer to what we've come to expect.
I thought it was fantastic and pretty darn close to the vintage is when he has to work out of trouble and, you know, but yeah, no, look, it was a smooth, fairly easy later in the season. Maybe he goes 7. Maybe after he's had a few good starts, even in May, he goes 7 in that one or tries, goes out there. But this was like, all right, cool. You know what? Great outing. And there's an off day coming up. So let's go ahead and empty out the bullpen. Have Matsui work 2 days in a row, which is another concern. You know, bring Peralta out there and, you know, finish off with Suarez.
Right. I would like to talk about a decision that Mike Shildt made there. I'm not sure I've ever seen a manager willingly take a run off the board following a catcher's interference call. This wasn't necessarily on our rundown of things to talk about today, but I think it's fascinating. Again, it was ground ball from Cronenworth, correct?
Yes.
There's catcher's interference. A run had scored on the play. They gave Mike Shildt the option to either have Cronenworth reach and send the scored runner back to third, right? Or to just take the result of the play and get 1 run on the board. Shildt says, put the guy back on third. That loads the bases for Manny Machado, who splits the gap with, I would argue, his biggest hit of the season so far. What was Mike Shildt's sort of rationalization for that? And what does this tell us about Mike Shildt?
So you take a run, but you also give an out, right?
You lose an out, right.
You've got a runner at second with 2 outs, or you have bases loaded with 1 out is what I believe it is, right?
Correct.
And we can look at it, and I think that if you're going to go strictly statistically speaking, it was slightly, basically even, but slightly in favor, analytics-wise, of taking bases loaded, okay? Mm-hmm. But it was a toss-up. Right. And you could look and go, oh, well, of course. I mean, if you're not going to do it with Manny Machado up, well, but wait a minute. Manny Machado was earlier had lined out, but you know, nonetheless made an out with bases loaded. He's 0 for 4 with the bases loaded this year. He's batting 250, and it's not good lately with runners in scoring position. As you noted, he hasn't had a big hit, and you know, this is real. It's not analytics. It's real. I thought it was a really good decision. It caused a lot of discussion at the time, at the moment it happened. I wrote about it afterward. I thought that, you know, you're right. I thought it was a fascinating and one of those things that a manager does that, well, this one could be overlooked because you don't take a run off the board all the time. But there's just things that managers do. And I do think it was big for showing his belief in his players. And I think that obviously it was the right call, the three-run double. I will say it's interesting. Jake Cronenworth thought he would – now, if you watched it, Jake Cronenworth standing off to the side waiting for what happens, right, as he's staying at first. He thought he was going back in the dugout because he thought they'd take the run.
Right. At the time –
smart guy. Jake Cronenworth might be a manager later. It wasn't a total no-brainer.
Right. The Padres were ahead 1-0 at the time. Mm-hmm. Had they counted that run, it would have been 2-0. Instead, Machado gets the three-run double.
Who has grounded into four double plays, believed tied for second or third most in the National League at the time. So, you know, there was some risk.
Well, yeah. And again, this was a Padre team that, you know, had scored two runs the night before, had gotten swept by the Phillies, though they had scored runs in that Phillies series. You know, I'm watching on TV at home, Kevin, and I go, this is a team that's struggling to score. Take the run, make it 2-0. And by the way, not because of who was on deck necessarily, just because it's the bird in hand, right? A double play ends the inning.
Right, double play ends the inning. And I'm telling you, and I'm not making this Bob Melvin. But Bob Melvin might have taken the run. Like, they're just kind of a resignation of. I mean, I could just see Bob afterwards saying, hey, I feel like we needed the run. We haven't been, you know, one to – I can see, you know, Manny still comes up, could drive in another run. Well, that's not the decision Mike Shildt made. When I bring up Bob, I'm not trying to – I don't want to always pit this, the past versus the present. But I'm just saying, I think there was another decision to be made, and Bob made the – or Mike made the right one.
Yeah. Was it the right one because it worked out?
At the time, because there might have been someone sitting next to me who absolutely thought that it was the right one. Jeff at the time is like, two runs isn't going to be enough. And he's right. So, like, I do think that there is. And I was like, yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. I'm just trying to counter that it wasn't a no-brainer, but I think it was the right one anyway. Now, of course, would have written about, not that it was the wrong one, but it would have obviously been highlighting the downside of it had it not worked out. I still would, I believe, because I do try to provide perspective, have tried to given the other side of it, which, you know, was that, well, there was a chance with two more outs now to get three runs in or whatever. And they ended up getting four because new kid was Spencer Steer out there in left field having a little trouble. He dropped the Jackson Merrill fly ball, and Manny Machado ended up scoring. So turned out to be a big inning. And regardless, just like a pinch hitter or a relief pitcher, you can have all the right reasons in the world and it doesn't work out.
Right. And as it turned out, Jeff Sanders was right. Padres were up 5-0 and they won that game 6-4. I mean, you needed all the runs you could get there. I think it's so interesting. Again, it's barely May. What I'm learning about Mike Shildt and how he compares to the small army of previous Padre managers that we can all name, right? It's interesting. This, to me, was not a decision. I said it in my living room two nights ago. This was not a decision I don't think Bob Melvin would have made. You just said the same thing. It's interesting. And I guess now is a good time to put trust in a guy like Manny Machado. Yes, he's still struggling. You know, in his last seven games, he has four RBIs. Three of them came on that one hit.
You're trying to win that game. So if you're the manager and you think the other way to go is the way to win that game, fine. I disagree with you. I disagreed with you at the time. It's not hindsight. But you're also – you ain't winning 85 games, 88 games, 92 games, whatever it takes, without Manny Machado coming through in situations like that.
Right. A college baseball coach who I used to cover, who I think the world of, once said that as a manager, one eye has to be a telescope and one eye has to be a micro. You got to be focused on the granular – but also what that means and what you're telling your team. And this was sort of a telescope moment, I think, for Mike Shildt. He shows trust in Manny Machado. Manny Machado rewards him with the biggest hit of his season so far. Padres go on to take a series from the Reds. Well, let's talk about Jerickson Profar. quickly. You had a story in today's UT, and you know the headline sort of says it all. It's like, for better or worse, Jurickson Profar is the best Padre right now.
Yep.
He's hitting .342, OPS of .953. His comments to you, I thought, were interesting in terms of, you know, he agrees he's probably not going to be their best player all year, in that he's just kind of waiting for everybody else to catch up. What did he say there, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, Jurickson believes in himself very strongly. To me, yeah. Jurickson is exactly what you need to be if you're a 10-year vet, which, by the way, is more than 90% of people that are even play in the major leagues. So we're talking about 1% of all of us who started out playing Little League. So, but guys don't make it 10 years of service time, okay? But then a guy who never has lived up to expectations, but he's making the most of it at the end of his career by being a good player, by being a smart player. And now smart, that shows up in his base running, his knowing when to bunt, his all sorts of things. But it also shows up in, how am I going to approach this season? Go out there and play. I have talent. I believe in myself. I just came off a good winter ball. I'm Jurickson Profar. And if you've ever met him, you know he's extremely confident in himself if he's batting .220. And I think that's a wonderful trait, and a trait that helps you, you know, get to 10 years of service time in the major leagues. And that's what he's doing this year. He is taking all of his experience and doing that. And he is counseling he said it to me, but I guarantee you, because I asked, he is counseling other guys around the clubhouse to do the same. Just in a way of, guys, you are so good. Just go out and play. Not like a, hey, go out there and it'll happen, kind of like in the negative way of like what they did last year to a certain extent, right? But in a way of, no, have this urgency, yes. But like, you're too good to not be performing at a better level. Just go play. Stop worrying about your mechanics. Stop worrying about this or that. Should I swing? Should I not? What do you need to do in this moment to succeed? Jurickson Profar has probably sacrificed some power, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, like, you know, he's getting big hits to the gaps, and some of them are doubles. And you know, because he's like, in this moment, what do I need to do? Put the ball in play.
Right. He said something to you that I thought was interesting was, this was the first year he hadn't set goals for himself. And he actually acknowledged, he said, every year I set goals for myself and every year I fall short.
Yeah, he actually, okay, so just, this isn't for you, Ryan, this is for the listener. Sure. He actually said that's the one quote in the story that was to a group, the rest were to me. That was the one story, was after yesterday's game. The other quotes are from when I talked to him before the game. But yes, that I thought that was very interesting, and it shows in his play. It is noticeable that Jurickson Profar is playing winning baseball.
Right. And people who might be new to the Padres or might be new to Major League Baseball or who might not be dorks like me and you, I think we need to reiterate, Jurickson Profar was the it guy as a prospect.
2010, 11, 12, yep.
He was the guy who broke the mold, right? He was a tall, athletic shortstop to begin with, correct?
Yep.
Somebody who hit from both sides. I mean, if we were taking futures bets 12 years ago, Jurickson Profar would be the guy we had ticketed for stardom.
He was Tatis Jr. before Fernando Tatis Jr. Maybe not like that, but very close.
What's really cool is he didn't flame out, Kevin. He's just become a very good regular player. Every time I watch him get a big hit for the Padres now, too, and this might be a separate podcast, I wonder what the hell happened last year.
Yeah. He was not comfortable. He's a guy who knows he should have stayed here. I think there were other things too. He didn't have a spring training last year.
Showed up late, showed up after the season.
Just like good is contagious, bad can be contagious, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe there were some mechanical things, because he talks all the time about working with Fernando Tatis Sr. In the offseason with Tatis. You know, he played for Estrellas. They worked in the mornings together. So there's all sorts of stuff, but I don't think, and I don't think he would undervalue this, the comfort that he has here.
Right. And if we're going to be critical, and justifiably so, of the money the Padres have paid out to certain players over the years, it must be noted that this guy is a bargain. At $1.5 million can top out at two or at a million can top out at 2.5, correct?
If he continues to play, like 600 plate appearances means that, you know, you started 130 games, right? And that you were in there, and yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, this is a Gary Sanchez level bargain, it seems.
You know what? Close to it. I mean, keeps going like this, it is. Again, I'm all Jurickson. I have been for a long time. He's a winning player if he's batting 247, okay? Because right. He's going to get a walk. He's going to set up the next batter, even if he makes an out. But I got to say, he hasn't even reached the first threshold where he gets like $150,000, I think, or $100,000. It's 150 plate appearances. He'll do it this week. So we're early in the season. Let's remember that. He's 31. He throws himself around a lot. He's playing every day. Let's remember there's a long way to go in the season.
He played winter ball. He didn't have a ton of an offseason. Yeah. And again, you make this point in your story, and it's a great one, which is this cannot continue all year. And like, for him to be on this kind of tear would require him being a player he's never been before.
Well, my point being that even if he does, he can't do it alone, right? It's not a problem that Jurickson Profar and Jake Cronenworth are carrying this team right now. Right. It's a problem that the other guys aren't even coming close.
Right.
The guys who are making the money. And by that, I just mean the guys who are being counted on. That's why they're getting the money. Xander Bogaerts, Fran Tatis Jr., Manny Machado. So those guys have to come up. Small sample size, it's always dangerous. Look at some things that Francisco Lindor, who's not having a good season, is doing for the Mets lately.
Right.
Big players come up in big moments. Check out Bryce Harper's clutch numbers. The big players come up in big moments, and they need more of that.
Absolutely. And Manny Machado came up in a big moment a couple nights ago, but that's been a rarity from him. And Tatis, can we talk about Tatis for a minute? You've mentioned a couple times on here how his approach has been much better this year, that he seems to be sort of spinning on bad pitches and, you know, it really only swinging at strikes. Has he veered from that a little bit lately? And what are we making of that?
And I'm not sure if I said it out loud, but I knew every time I mentioned it. I mean, I've been watching Tatis long enough to say that, you know, I'm complimenting him, I'm pointing this out, and at any time he could abandon it because he can get frustrated, right? Like any batter, first off. But Tatis in particular start to chase a certain kind of pitches, and he has. Now look, I think he's batting 175 since April 14th, and the 14th being the last game against the Dodgers, and that's 175 with a 3-for-4 in there in one of those Brewers games. So there was a game that in a small sample size should really help you, and it has, because other than that, I think it's like a 130. But that's a span of something like 16 games, and up until 3 or 4 nights ago, he wasn't chasing. But he wasn't getting the results. And I think I had it at that time that, like, he was chasing at like a 17% or 19% rate, which is really low. And that's chasing means pitches outside the strike zone and batting like, you know, 150. And he's not getting the reward. And he started to chase. I will say this, that final at bat, he's the guy who it was before Jake came up, Tatis walked on 4 pitches. 2 of the pitches were close. And Tatis clearly was up there with the mindset if he wasn't going to give anything, he wasn't going to beat himself as he has in a few plate appearances recently. And so that was a good sign. I mean, Tatis doesn't have a home run. And hold on, checks hashtag your little what do you do?
Checks
do you
notes.
Better when you checks say notes. Checks notes. Is it checks asterisk? Notes. Checks notes. 48 at bats without a home run. You know, he's not in a good way right now. But for much of that, the process was good. So this will be interesting.
And that's what we talk about in April and May with baseball too, right? In many ways, it's about the process. You know, they don't look at the standings, do they, in April and May?
Not so much. Like they wouldn't be able to tell you, like later they will, most of them. They're like us. It's all sorts of different writers. There's all sorts of different fans. There's all sorts of different players. Some guys do. But for the generally speaking, you are correct. Not really.
Fernando Tatis Jr. hasn't had a home run, 48 at bats. He's picking a good place to play.
And he likes it here.
Chase Field, where the air is thin, band box of a stadium, 3-game series starting Friday. Let's talk about the Diamondbacks for a minute. The Padres seem to dodge a bullet here, not facing any of the Diamondbacks, a big or highly paid starters. The pitching matchups seem to favor them in this series.
That's a good point.
You know, have you had a chance to watch the D-backs this year, and what are they up against?
Just highlights and just seeing that some of their better guys not having the follow-up years. Seems almost like the cliche year after the World Series year, or hey, year after the National League Championship Series year, like for the Padres. But a talented team that this has become a nice rivalry. You're right. They pushed back. I'm not exactly sure, but it was for rest. Gallen, Padres were supposed to face Gallen tonight. He's not pitching until Monday. I think they face the Reds. But I hate this ballpark, and I really hate these uniforms, but I really like this team. I like the way they play. I like Torey Lovullo. So you're facing Slade Ciccone. He made his debut last year. I will say this: he's making his third start, and the first two have both been six innings, and they were against the Giants and the Mariners, and he allowed the Giants two runs and the Mariners three, one, I think. So three runs in 12 innings, and he goes against Dylan Cease, looking for a bounce back. Matt Waldron faces Michael King.
King.
Is it Paul Fat? No, who's Fat?
Brandon. Mike. Brandon Fat.
Brandon Fat. Okay, I'm so focused on the Fat part, P-F-A-A-D-T, Fat. Who I believe last time he was at Petco, it was a really good game, like seven shutout or something last September. And that's the thing about a lot of these pitchers. You see them so often and like you think they're amazing when you see them. And like, I couldn't tell you how Brandon Fat's really been, but when the Padres have seen him. Now, speaking of that, Ryne Nelson starts against Matt Waldron on Sunday. Here's what I remember about Ryne Nelson. His first start was against the Padres, and it was like, seven shutout. Mm-hmm. His second start was against the Dodgers. Six shutout. Comes into his third start, and it's the somewhat infamous September 15th game here against the Diamondbacks. A four-game series. They'd lost on Thursday, and Bob Melvin got mad, and some players got mad, and some players talked about some things that night and the next afternoon, and Ryne Nelson was next up, and he'd shoved on him, and then he'd gone and shoved on the Dodgers, and I think that was at Dodger Stadium. And it's like, wow. And they got to Ryne Nelson, and I think the three games or two games after that, since they faced him, I think they've done pretty well against Ryne Nelson. So,
yeah. Was that the game where they jumped him early? It was like a Sunday afternoon or Saturday?
No, it was a Friday night that they got on Nelson.
Okay, that was the Burn the Boats series, was it not?
It was the Burn the Boats. Yes, Jake Cronenworth writing on the wall or on the whiteboard, Burn the Boats. So. Your point about them, you know, pitching matchups favoring the Padres. Sure, we'll go with that because you're avoiding their best, the Diamondbacks, quote unquote, best pitchers.
Right, but you're only throwing one of your three best pitchers.
Right, the Padres. Now, Michael King, fascinating. He's looked real good. He's got some peripheral or the underlying numbers that are real good, and he has a penchant for giving up home runs.
Yeah, I mean, he's tied for the lead league with 10 home runs allowed.
Do you know who that's tied with?
Teammate Joe Musgrove?
Yes.
Yes. And again, in that stadium, you don't want to be the guy who enters having allowed a bunch of homes because.
By the way, Ryne Nelson, you want to talk about some bad luck. He's just coming off the IL tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Bruised right elbow. Hit on the elbow by a line drive on April 18th.
Oh.
Of all pitching, the places when you're a pitcher.
Pitching arm, right elbow.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Lucky you didn't break it.
I know.
This is the Diamondbacks are a team. When we first started doing this podcast more than a year ago, when I took over for our previous host, you were the first to tell me that the Diamondbacks were a handful, as the kids say, that they were a problem. They run the bases well. They're very athletic. They have guys who deliver who might not be flashy. I mean, somebody like Christian Walker, right? Walk-off homer against the Dodgers will always be the guy who the Diamondbacks traded Paul Goldschmidt for. And yet you can make the argument he's been a better investment than Paul Goldschmidt since then. What makes this team such a problem?
The what you mentioned. I mean, they've just got guys that are tenacious. Of course, they got rid of my favorite guy who's tenacious, Josh Rojas.
Josh Rojas. But, is he a Mariner? Where is it?
You know, I believe that did the Mariners DFA him and he's back? Mariners when they came there, but check on that for me. I should know since I really do love the way that guy plays. And I, to me, he embodied what the Diamondbacks were, and he was a part of the trade for the closer
Paul Sewald.
You know, which, you know, can't argue with that.
Here's the headline for you. I don't know if you can read it. You probably can't. Josh Rojas has been the Mariners' early season MVP. Look at that.
I rub that in the face of some of my scout friends who make fun of me. Yeah, they're just I'll say this. In addition to what you said, they're that team that I feel like I've heard more often than not, like, well, they're familiar with us. Right? And you always hear that and you go, well, aren't you familiar with them too? But it just, like, when you play a team over and over, they know how to attack you. And it seems like the Diamondbacks do find a way here the last couple of years.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, wrapping up here, I always put you on the spot. Without swearing, tell me your thoughts on Chase Field, roof open versus roof closed. And let's start there.
Closed, and there has not been a worse ballpark in the history of baseball. I say hyperbolically on purpose. Okay. It's an airplane hangar. It's awful. Roof open, it's only slightly better. And there's a lot of ballparks with the roofs, Seattle, Houston, that Milwaukee. When you go roof open, oh, wow, okay. It's not quite a ballpark still because it's really hard to make a retractable roof be a ballpark in the ballpark sense of things. It's still kind of like a stadium. Maybe it's a field, field being in between ballpark. But it's just so bad. In their defense, what was it, 1997? Because they started in 98?
98, yeah.
Right. So like – you were still in between. You just started doing the ballparks. You have to have a retractable roof or a dome here. You just do.
Too hot.
And so that's in their defense, but they haven't done much to keep it up. It's the opposite, like Ron Burgundy, it smells of Burgundy and, or whatever, you know, like
and cheese.
The only time that place doesn't smell stale and gross is on Sunday mornings when they've already started cooking the Wetzel's pretzels, because then that's throughout the ballpark. It's always empty. So there's no smell of people or anything like that. So, though they have been averaging more recently this year coming off the World Series, you'd think so. Right. It's just awful. That said, I like Phoenix. I'm looking out at it downtown right now. I love Phoenix. I love the dry heat. It's all good.
It's all good. Let me push back just briefly. Please. As somebody who lived in that state for almost 20 years before moving back, somebody who went to college about 2 hours south of there. I was a partial Diamondback season ticket holder. When I took this job, I was in, it was 10 or 15 games, and I'd go to see the other teams. Go to see the Padres primarily. But, you know, I was in on that. I think when the roof is open and the panels in the outfield are turned sideways, it's good. Not bad. It's good. It's good. The problem is it's almost never the case. If you go between the months of, say, June and September, there's no way in hell they're taking the roof off, right? Tonight, you get lucky because the roof is open. But they have already announced that the roof will be closed Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
I my guess is that because it's a 6:40 start tonight and 5:40 Saturday, maybe they want it closed right around then.
Here's the thing. Uh-huh. Because they're following the Chargers blueprint of trying to get out of town or get someone to pay for a new ballpark, they haven't done maintenance that is required on this place. So you used to be able to open the roof in the middle of the game.
Yes.
You can't anymore. It's too dangerous. They're afraid that like something's going to snap and kill people. So the roof has to either be open or closed before the game.
Yes. They used to have roof music.
It was awesome.
Yes.
It was one of my favorite parts. It was fantastic.
Yes. It's sad because I think, and I've been going to games there, Kevin. I went to my first game there in 1998, their expansion year. I've been going to games there for years. There was a time when it was a good ballpark, even with the roof closed, but tastes have changed. All the other ballparks have gotten better. I mean, keep in mind, this stadium opened when the Padres were playing at Jack Murphy, right?
Yeah.
Qualcomm, whatever.
Qualcomm.
Qualcomm. Yes. Qualcomm. I mean, tastes have changed. I mean, in their own division, everybody has either gotten, well, no, I mean, they've improved their ballparks. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
And, you know,
hey, you want to know how old? I know that you were saying how old, you were giving an example of how old it is, an illustration of how old it is. It had only been Qualcomm for 1 year.
Wow.
1997. I was there covering the Dodgers. I remember the press release. It was at the kind of the cutting edge of ballparks being named, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember the press release that going forward, this will be known as Qualcomm Stadium and this whatever deal that sounded so big at the time and turned out to be not really that big as naming rights went. But 1997 Qualcomm.
I will also push back just a little bit to something you said earlier. The D-backs new uniforms are an improvement. They may not be good, but they're better than they were.
Just well, saying. I didn't know that they're still – now, I, as someone from San Diego who covers the Padres, I should not be making fun of changing uniforms all the time. But it seems like the Diamondbacks still have like 6 or 7 that they have, and they've had like 40. But, again, don't be – you know, got to know yourself here. I'm coming from a place where, you know.
Hey, I am team bring back the purple. They should do what the Padres did with Brown. Bring back the purple. Bring back what you wore in 01. It's dated, but it's you.
Okay, that I'll give you. That's fine. I'll give you. It's you, and it would accomplish that. Those are worse. I almost said almost as bad. Those are worse than the Padres clown uniforms that some people like over Brown. The orange and blue and
the 1990s,
weren't you? You liked those, didn't you? Because they were from your era.
Yeah, 1998. Like what they wore in 1998.
That I get. See, that's why the Diamondbacks won. That's okay that they would wear those awful purple because that's the era of Randy Johnson and the playoffs all the time and the World Series win. So if you are partial to the Padres clown uniform because that's when you became a fan, 100%, I'm down with that.
Right. They're purple because, again, Jerry Colangelo owned the team. Jerry Colangelo also owned the Suns. And all the people in Phoenix were wearing purple anyway.
I was big on the bring back the Brown movement, but I think Brown is the way to go. But number one, it's their original color, so it is.
Yes.
But I also always said if the Padres had won in any one of their variation of the generic, we wouldn't be having this conversation because you don't have to change your uniforms to distract people when you're winning. And people grow fond of what it is you won in. Because there is no discerning human being that could think the clown uniforms were the best Padres uniforms unless what you're doing, and you're not probably can't even admit this to yourself, Ryan and others, mm-hmm. you're looking at it through the lens of how fun it was to watch Tony Gwynn and Trevor Hoffman and Greg Vaughn and Ken right. Caminiti and to, you know, have a team that went to the World Series. That is coloring your lens on these awful uniforms.
Can I make you feel old for a minute? And then we do have to go. We're running out of time. The best high school baseball player in Phoenix, Arizona today. You ready? Ken Caminiti's nephew, Cam Caminiti. Talk about a great name. Cam Caminiti. That's pretty awesome. Anyway, I've just shown way too much Arizona knowledge for my own good.
A little bit.
That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Ace, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.